Okay, so another instrument on Cassini, that's VIMS, stands for Visual and Infrared Mapping Spectrometer. Well, the way I got involved in this observation is that I am a co-investigator on this instrument, on Cassini, and I do all the Titan implementations for this instrument. The connection with exoplanets is that I worked on the interior structure of Earth-like planets and ocean worlds. So I developed models of the relationships between mass and radius for Earth-like planets. And so I was invited here to come for a month. I spent 3 weeks actually, and then came back for during 1 week for the conference. And last year, as we were working on the Cassini Solstice mission, CSM. Is that? Yes. Okay. We had some discussion during a VIMS team meeting with Jason Barnes and Phil Nicholson, Jason Soderblom, Bob Brown, who is a PI, about the possibilities for VIMS to observe exoplanets and to see some transits. The reason why is that Jason Barnes did his PhD on VIMS observations of Titan, and then he did a postdoc at Ames working on exoplanets and looking at satellites around other planets. So there was this discussion. And then Cassini, will start the extended mission in July or October. I don't know exactly what's the exact date. I don't know if they try to fit with fiscal year or to fit with the date we started with Cassini in July 2004. But anyway, it's not very important. So we have the extended mission, and we thought that it would be maybe a good idea to propose some new science for the extended mission. We thought that it was important to show what can be done and what are the limitations with our instrument. And it would be a good experience for future instruments on planetary mission to do some observations of exoplanets. And if we find something interesting, well, it's good for Cassini, it's good for everyone. And if we don't, it's worth trying the observation. And because the extension is so long, 7 years, it's a very long extension. My personal feeling was that it's really worth trying to do this kind of observation. It's not because we do one observation that it's going to provide some damage on on the other observations. Especially if we can do one observation, which apparently no one has asked time for. We took a segment in which no other team asked for this time. There are several limitations. Bob already talked about those. The characteristic of our instruments, the VIMS instrument, it's you will see that. But it was built in the 90s, so it's pretty old technology. The operations, so this has been mentioned. The prime with the reaction wheels. I think Cassini can be. We can work with two reaction wheels. We are using three reaction wheels, but I think only if two are working, that's fine. And on Cassini, you have four of them, and there is one spare one. The idea is to do a test on the HD 189733, which is very bright star. Okay, so I came here in February, late February, beginning of March. And actually, discussing with the people here, they asked me to do a presentation the first week of March. And the conclusion of this discussion were that we have all the targets, and we should try to get an observation by the end of 2010. Well, I had to do the implementation, not the implementation, but the request by March 12th. So actually, I had only 1 week to make the case. But we did it, and we got the implementation. We got the request on time. Then we have got some difficulties because, as was mentioned before, it's not in the traceability matrix. And so someone found out that we ask for time, knows the team, ask for this time, but then they say, well, you know, we can do some good stuff at Saturn during the same observation. So it's a battle, but so it went, you know, to the level Bob mentioned, to the PhD. And right now, I think the people are willing to do this observation. And actually, you know, the support we got from ExoPag has been appreciated because it helped us to make the case. So Cassini, well, I just want to, I mean, it has already been mentioned that we have, you know, 16 days a revolution, but we have pretty long observations which can be done at apoapsis. And this is, you know, during apoapsis that we implemented or we requested this observation. So just a few words about Cassini-VIMS. Actually, if you want details about the instrument, you can read the paper by Bob Brown et al. In 2004 in Space Science Reviews. And there is also a paper by Bilucci et al. In Icarus, especially for in-flight calibration and the noise that we have in the detector. So Cassini, VIMS, has 96 channels in the visible and 256 channels in the infrared, going from 880 nanometers up to 5,100 nanometers. We have a spectral resolution which starts at 10 nanometers when we are in the near infrared, and at the end of the wavelength range, it's 20 nanometers. The field of view is 0.25 by 0.50 milliradians. So that's another thing. 1 milliradian is what, 100 arc seconds? You know, when we started discussing together with Jamie, we found out that we don't use the same units. So, but that's okay. We can figure that out. It's 200 arc seconds. Okay, yeah. So 0.5 is 100 arc seconds. So you know it's really large. And then we have in the infrared we have two mirrors in order to get images. So when we acquire an image, we acquire all the spectral information on one pixel, and then you have scanning mirrors in two directions in order to get an image. So the telescope is 23 centimeters in diameter. Detectors are, you know, INSB detectors. And on Cassini, on VIMS, we set up what we call a star tracker mode for occultations, which allows us to get very long integration time on the star and to follow the star as the star is moving behind Titan. And here you have some ideas about the root mean square noise within each interval. And of course, when we go to higher wavelengths, then this value becomes larger and larger. So this is about VIMS, yes? It's a kind of, let's see, it's not, if we integrate, I think we can, the linearity of the detectors goes up to 4,000 electrons. And so if we have these 4,000 electrons, then the noise would be on the order of 81.1 times 10 minus 3 times 4,000. So it's a kind of, it's a noise we get. And of course, if we don't get it, it gets worse. You know, if we don't saturate, if we have only 10% of the detectors which are filled, then the noise can be much worse. So I'll just show about Titan. Well, actually, I show that because maybe you remember, but when Cassini was decided, no one thought that we could take images of Titan. Actually, you know, the VIMS spectrometer was not supposed to take any image of Titan because we thought that because of the atmosphere, it was impossible to see Titan's surface. At that time, before 1990, we didn't know that there were infrared windows through which we could observe Titan's surface. So VIMS was not designed. Actually, during the nominal mission, we didn't have any observation at closest approach. It turned out that we got some, first because of the Huygens problem, so the tour has been changed, and so we were able to introduce some of the observation. And then there was another observation which was not decided between radar and the remote sensing instruments, and so it was given to VIMS in order to observe Titan. So this is what you can see here in the infrared. So this is a typical spectrum of Titan in the infrared, so from 0.88 to 5 micron. And you can see the different windows through which you can see the surface. Most of the light which gets to the surface, which is reflected from the surface, is actually diffracted light because of the atmosphere and the haze in Titan's atmosphere. But as you go to longer and longer wavelengths, it's no more true. And for example, at 5 micron, this is a specular reflection on Titan, you know, Big Lake, Kraken Mare here. And the specular reflection shows that a good percentage of the light is actually direct light on the surface. And we think that at 5 micron, I mean, it's model dependent. You know, some models predict 15%, some other models predict 40%. About half the light would be reflected. Actually, when we set up this observation, I mean, I set up this observation after hiking on Mount Wilson, and I was looking at the Pacific Ocean, and I could see the specular reflection on the Pacific Ocean. I said, well, maybe I can do that also on Titan, looking at, with a 5 micron window. But I didn't say anything to anyone because, I guess people would think it was crazy to think about that. But we got the specular reflection on Kraken Mare. So this is the kind of observations we can do with VIMS. Oh, it's I over F. So it's the amount of light which is reflected from Titan divided by the solar flux. Yes. Yeah, it's not albedo because actually, you know, with Titan, it's very difficult to get the albedo because we need a relative model of the atmosphere. So we cannot get the raised surface albedo. We need to work. I mean, for someone like me who is interested in what's going on the surface, the atmosphere is noise. But for the people who do atmosphere, the surface is noise. And the problem is it's not easy because actually, depending on the model you use, but when you have diffracted light, the albedo, I mean, the amount of light that gets diffracted depends on the albedo of the surface. So it's really complicated.
Does the specular reflection show that you have waves on that surface, or is that pretty much?
We're working on it. We have a paper. Yeah, apparently there is no wave.
Okay, so it's like an image reflected off of the spherical mirror.
Yeah, yeah.
Which means that there's a virtual sun hidden below the surface of the
Actually, it was nice too because, you know, when the radar team found out about these leaks, there were some people saying, well, you know, the radar shows that it's very dark, it's very smooth, but maybe it's not liquid. With, you know, this kind of observation, it makes the case much stronger. Okay, so the first observation we proposed, we would try to get is on HD 189733. So what we said is that there are some observations of secondary eclipse of this extrasolar planet, and we show that there is apparently some methane, and we know from Cassini where there are planets where you have methane and you have fluorescence of methane at 3.3 micron, and it has been observed on Jupiter, Saturn, and Titan. Actually, there is a paper by Kevin Benz. On the fluorescence of methane. And of course, methane is important. I mean, you have methane on Mars, you have methane on Titan. All the link with, you know, life, of course, is is quite interesting. And so the idea is to try to look at this 3.3 micron emission during an eclipse of the planet orbiting around that star. When you look at what is available, I mean, this wavelength range is beyond what can be done with NICMOS on the Hubble Space Telescope. And it's too short for Spitzer. So actually, you know, VIMS is in a spectral range, which is quite interesting for observing this kind of planets. We have two modes, actually. We have this occultation mode that we set up before the launch and which exists on the instrument in order to maximize integration time on the star. But we are not sure that we, I will show you later, but we are not sure because of the field of view, we are not sure that we can really follow the star. And maybe, you know, the instrument will shift to another star. So we will also implement a small 2x4 pixels wide image of the region around the star. So what we did, and we had to do it really quickly, is to look at as transits of different planets around different stars. So here you have the, you know, different colors are for different planets. And these are the observations. And as was mentioned before, the spacecraft turns the antenna to Earth in order to do some downlink. And so what you expect is that the transit is not going to occur during this downlink because you want to observe it. So at the beginning, we wanted to have only about 9 hours, you know, 4 hours before the transit, 4 hours after the transit, and just to observe the transit. And then it turned out that because of the reduction in budget, the wandering apoapsis to have only one observation. So in fact, you have 138 hours observation that we set up, which is so 1.5 days. And I don't remember exactly which one we got, but it's one where we can observe the primary transit. So actually, yeah, I forgot to say that, but when you have crosses, between two crosses at the primary transit and between two circles at the secondary transit. And so we are able to pick up a good observation. So we had this information, and then we had the information about the other teams, what they wanted to do, and we just put our observation in a slot where no one has asked anything. And so we thought we were safe, but then someone came and said, well, no, we cannot do that. It's not in the traceability matrix, but I think it will work. We have, I think, two main challenges. The first one is VIMS detectors. So here you have some signal-to-noise ratio for different integration time, 5 minutes and 2 hours. So this is as a function of wavelengths. So we plan to do the, you know, the observation of the, I mean, for each wavelength. But we're interested in the emission of methane at 3.3 microns. So in this area, which you can observe here, this is a synthetic spectrum. And one, we are confident that we can get something. And you know, if we get it, if we can confirm that there is methane in this in the atmosphere of that planet, I think that would be a really good result. The second challenge is the field of view. So we look at what the sky looks like in this area. I don't know exactly where it's HD. Don't ask me. I mean, I'm not an astrophysicist, so you know, I'm not able to find the star we are looking at. But I was really surprised to see, you know, how many stars you can find in the small field of view. Anyway. So I think this one is going to be quite challenging. But Cassini is quite stable, you know. With the kind of field of view that we have, Cassini is really very, very stable. And when we took images of Titan or other icy bodies, I mean, I don't know what the experience you have with ISS, but for VIMS, it was very, very stable. We don't have any smearings. So we have other examples. You know, we had we have other things in the box ready to be implemented. And so the conclusion: first, we will test the star tracking mode in June. Actually, we have observations where we do occultations, And we found out that actually without moving the spacecraft or the pointing, we can test this star tracking to see if that's the one we will be using for the October. So the first observation will be in October this year. And of course, you know, depending on the results we will get, then we will be able to do more requests to ask for more observation time during the extended mission. As it was mentioned before, you know, it takes about almost a year, you know, to put the request into the pipeline in order to do those observations. There are other targets which apparently are quite interesting. I discussed with several people, and especially when you have very large eccentricity, there is some good work which could be done with VIMS if we can, you know, demonstrate that we can do this kind of observations. And I think it's a very good you know, exercise for future collaboration between planetary missions and astrophysical observations. And you know, I must say that what Jimmy presented, for example, I'm very excited about that. And you know, if we can do something during the cruise phase to do some astrophysics observations, and then we can do the planetary observation, I think that would be really tremendous. And even if it costs, you know, 1/4 of the budget of a mission, I think it's worth doing it. So that's pretty much what I want to say here.
Any questions?
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, I forgot to say that. It was a 5 by 5 arc minutes, I think. Yeah. And so it's much bigger than what we have. I mean, let's see, 0.5. I think it's 1 minute. We have 1 minute the field of view. Is that correct?
Wow.
Jimmy. It's half a meridian, yeah. Yeah, so it's much smaller. It's just I couldn't find out. I could have reduced that, but yeah, it's a 5 by 5 minutes that I showed. Yeah. Well, actually, the good news I think is that in the infrared, it's easier to follow that star. Because it has more more signal in the infrared than some of the stars around it.
Back in March, I think it was you gave some signal to noise ratios for measurements during transits. Mm-hmm. Could you say what some of those are here?
Well, we're still working on it because we found out that the model we had for VIMS had a bug. And actually, it's much better than what we thought. You know, in March, I thought it would be...
Well, it was sort of acceptable then, which means it's much better now.
Yeah, it's even better. We don't want to say too much because, you know, we're not sure we will be able to measure the 1% level that I think is needed in order to be able to observe something. But I think we can get, you know, even better than that.
More questions?
Yeah, but yeah, and we have, you know, we can integrate during very long times. Well, shouldn't say that. We can do several observations, and then we can sum up the observations. Apparently, that's something which has also, which is done also with Earth-based observations. And Jason Barnes, who has been involved in some of those observations, is very confident that we can get some signal.
Yeah, I was just going to comment that the place where having an instrument like this at Saturn is really useful is for microlensing parallax, but unfortunately we have to give 9-month lead time on the observations. Is that about right?
Yeah. I guess that's right. I mean...
Well, I mean, I had a comment on that. I mean, I thought the
the strategy that we should try for that would be to see if we could get approval, you know, for a set of observations where we don't precisely specify the coordinates until the last minute. And, you know, we'd probably be proposing for apoapsis observations. So presumably the, well, hopefully the requirements on, you know, exactly where we point the spacecraft are not going to, not going to be all that strict. So hopefully.
Well, that might be aided by the fact that I think the angular resolution isn't that terrific here, and so you'll get, I mean, I don't think that you'd be able to select individual stars there. Is that correct?
We cannot. We cannot select. I mean, with VIMS. I guess with ISS you can, but not with VIMS.
Yeah, so we'd be tempted to propose for ISS probably because our crowding is generally an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing we were going to investigate. And so, you know, then if we could, you know, plan 9 months ahead of time, then we try to get, you know, get that sort of thing approved, and then maybe try and do it next year, 2011. So, you know, we can only observe when it's a bulge season on the ground. It's bulge season at Saturn for half an orbit, I think. Half an orbit of Saturn from now, so we could go well beyond the end of their extended mission. But to have events to observe that we also observe on the ground, we have to only observe in the bulb season on Earth.
So is the bulb visible from Saturn next year and the year after?
Yeah, it's visible, you know, for... It's, you know, it's like 90 degrees away from the sun now, and it'll get, you know, it's going to be between us and the bulge at the end of the extended mission.
So
it's actually, the observations are qualitatively different if we do them now than if we do them at the end of the extended mission, because the projected separation at the end of the mission is only of order an AU, whereas now it's 10 AU.